Hear that? Up there in that tree? Oh, yeah.
Tweet, tweet.
It's me and all my homies love native manu, and it's about to start.
Yes, this is me and all my homies love native manu. This week, Etiwi, we will be talking about the kea. And here to talk with me, as always, about our native manu is my homie, the Birdman 3000. It's Pete Tonda.
Morena, Liv.
Morena.
Big kōrero today.
Big kōrero. Let's get right into it. Give us the classification of this manu, Pete.
Yeah, the kea, the endemic, only found here. Nationally endangered. Bird of the Year 2017.
Okay, an award-winning bird.
Absolutely. And they're the world's only alpine parrot.
Wow.
But they come from a very ancient line of parrots, along with the kākāpō and the kākā.
Mm-hmm.
Their ancestors were around when Aotea was still attached to the Gondwana land supercontinent 200 million years ago.
Okay.
Wow. So the ancestors are really ancient, and yeah, then they've just evolved from that. There's only about, they're not quite sure, 1,000 to 5,000 kea today.
Yeah, I was reading that it's quite hard to estimate the population.
Very hard.
Size.
They move around a lot.
Due to the widespread nature of their habitat.
Yeah, yep. But they were massively hunted and shot between 1860 and 1970.
Yeah.
There was even a government-funded bounty on them
for
100 years. And in the 1920s, that was like 10 shillings per beak.
Holy
shit. Which was like $65. So people made money out of it.
Because so they were attacking stock.
They were attacking stock, mostly sheep, unfortunately. And they did attack sheep. Not all of them did.
Yeah.
But they had this unfortunate practice of digging into the rump of the sheep because there was some quite nice fat around the liver.
Exactly.
Anyway, we'll talk more about that a bit later. But they only became fully protected in 1986.
Quite late.
150,000 of them shot over that period. And unfortunately, today, the odd one's still being shot for attacking livestock.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's legal?
It's not legal.
Okay. Yeah. Well, no, of course
it's
not.
It's not legal, yeah. Fully protected.
Well, if anyone's shooting a bloody cow, I'll be coming to their house and hearing some strong words. Anyway, Māori relationship to the kea is the taonga species for Ngāi Tahu e Ngāi o Te Tō Ihu, which is iwi of the top of the South Island.
Yeah.
It's also another onomatopoeic bird because the kea is, it's the call they make.
Kea.
Yeah.
But in a slightly shriller tone.
Seen as a kaitiaki of the Southern Alps, which is really beautiful.
Yeah.
Their feathers were used for kākahu, clothes, and korowai. And the orange feathers, which are underneath their wings, were symbolised rangatiratanga and mana.
Yeah.
So if you wore one of those
really
feathers.
Important.
Yeah, you're really important. And you said they were also used for kai as well.
Yeah, they were eaten as well.
Yeah. Yeah. They'd be tasty, eh?
They're probably pretty good, yeah. They had a good diet.
Yeah. And we've got some whakatauki as well. The first one is hekea ke pai maunga, hekea orangi ke pai atamai. Ooh, that's a heater. What does that speak to, Pete?
The mountain parrot sits atop of the mountains and sits atop of the pinnacle of intelligence.
Mm.
And it's interesting, that's a recently created whakatauki by Ngāi Tahu and a bunch of Māori scholars.
Mm.
And when they talk about it, they sort of talk about when the kea have returned to our mountains in a state of abundance, so too will our ancient knowledge be returned. So they've linked those two together. So that's a beautiful connection.
Beautiful symbiotic relationship, and so true. And our second whakatauki we have is ko te manu e kai ana e te mātauranga, nōna te ao. Ooh, what is that? What does that feel like?
The bird that eats of the tree of knowledge will gain the world.
Mm.
And that whakatauki is often applied to the kia due to its intelligence and high learning ability compared to many other manu. And it sort of reinforces that, you know, gaining knowledge will enable you to succeed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And do you want to speak a little bit about what Ngāi Tahu is doing in Well, Te Rautaki Waka Ora Kea, their kia restoration strategy.
Yeah, so they've partnered up with DOC and the Kia Conservation Trust, and they've built this sort of 10-year recovery program.
Mm.
And it just looks at ways to enable the kia to thrive. A lot of it's around predator control, but a lot of it's also about managing those conflicts with humans.
Mm.
And kia just love to be around people.
They
and
do.
They're naughty and they get into mischief and they steal things, they break things.
Yeah.
And they can attack sheep. So, you know, we've got to figure out ways of how do we live with them in a way that, you know, manages those conflicts.
Exactly, exactly. But yeah, how would you describe this manu, P? I've mentioned the orange feathers under the wings.
They're just stunning manu.
Yeah.
Large parrot. They're about 879 grams, 46 to 50 centimetres long, so quite big manu. Strong flyers, but they like to spend a lot of time on the ground.
Mm.
Olive green plumage.
Mm.
But they've got that wonderful orange and yellow patterning under the wing when they fly, and it just really flashes in the light. And on their upper side in flight, they've got these beautiful flashes of blue and green with little dark grey wingtips. So they're just stunning. They look amazing.
They're so cute as well.
Yeah, they are. And they've got a slender grey black beak, but it's very sharp and incredibly strong.
So that would hurt if it you got attacked by that.
Yeah. So. And they're sexually dimorphic, like many birds. You were curious about that.
Yeah, I had to ask what this meant.
So it basically means there's differences in appearance and characteristics between the male and the female.
Yeah.
So last week the putangitangi, the female had that brilliant white head and the male had a darker colour.
Yeah.
For these, the kia, the females are about 20% smaller and their bill is a bit shorter.
Yeah. And they can live up to, in captivity can live up to 50
years. Yeah, they talk about in captivity. I guess they haven't.
Are there many birds here? I actually did see a kia last year in captivity and I was like, this is cooked.
They have in zoos and stuff like that. So they've measured it sort of in captivity. Mm. But I think in the wild, if they don't get predated or something like that, they have a pretty long lifespan.
Yeah.
But one of the most intelligent manu in the world, super smart, inquisitive, gets them into trouble. They like to dismantle things like the rubber seals around car windscreens and the rubbers on wipers.
Yeah. I love to see it, eh? Because, mum lives in Twizel and we go up to, Aldaki to do heaps of hikoi up there. And there's always a kia in the car park just demolishing someone's waka.
Making trouble. And not giving a toss about it.
I love it. I love to see it. It's like, this is my home. I'll mess with you.
And so there's a few stories on the DOC website about a kia learnt to turn on a tap. A sparring hut when it got thirsty.
That's awesome.
Another kia locked a mountaineer inside a toilet at Mueller Hut. And I do wonder what the mountaineer was up to draw the attention of the kia, but we won't get into that.
That is crazy because the Mueller Hut is, so isolated.
Yeah,
this huge, in the Aldaki National Park. Damn.
Yeah, that's a problem. And then this other kia learnt to set off stoat traps so it could get the eggs in the trap to eat. So it figured out how to spring the trap and then when it got the eggs.
Yeah, amazing.
But they raid people's packs for food and they just like to hang about us and mess with ourselves.
Yeah, I love
it. Stuff.
I love it so much. And so you have talked about how they live in kind of the alpine areas of South Island, but they did used to be in the North Island as well.
Yeah, they did. And I think in the Ice Age when it was colder and the habitat was more suitable.
Yep, yeah.
But they're not in the North Island anymore.
So now...
So the sort of top of the South Island, Farewell Spit to Waitutu, which is right down the bottom of Te Waipounamu. They can be found from coastal dunes to alpine peaks.
Yep.
But they're most common in the high forest and subalpine and alpine zones.
Yeah. And I imagine with the, well, we've had a lot of our native forests post-colonisation be destroyed, and so that's really probably limited their habitat as well.
And that's part of the problem with sheep and things, that they're pushed into other areas and they go searching for other food sources.
Exactly.
Because we've taken their natural food sources or away or limited them. So
this
you can't really blame them for saying, oh, this tasty fat on that sheep.
Yeah, there's a nice little bit of mutton lamb right there. But, yeah, apart from the old sheep, what are they eating, Pete?
Yeah, so they're omnivores. So they eat shoots, fruits, leaves, nectar, seeds, plant tubers, insect larvae.
Mm.
But they're highly adaptive, so they've learnt to scavenge on the fat of dead deer, chamois and tar that have been shot by hunters.
Yeah.
Some have developed a taste for the kaikoura titi chicks.
Ooh.
Tasty little snack. And that, yeah, we have talked about sheep. So some of them target the fat around the kidneys, and unfortunately they sit on the sheep and they've got very sharp beaks and they just dig in to get the fat. So it's pretty horrible for the sheep and the sheep get sort of infections and can die, or they get spooked and run over bluffs. So it's not good.
No.
So we've got to find a way of managing that.
Exactly.
But I read that moa bones in the Canterbury swamp looked like they had kea beak scratches around the hip bones.
Wow. So I actually read about that too.
They may have learnt that behaviour way, way back.
It's ancestral practice.
So, and we come into the environment and they just keep doing what they evolved to do.
Yeah. And they – and what's their kind of breeding practices, Pete?
They're monogamous, long life bonds or lifelong bonds, usually lay about 4 eggs between July to January, but the peak is around August and September. They nest mostly in the native forests, on the ground in natural cavities, rock crevices, hollow bases of trees or roots, or in hollow logs. Incubation is about 22 to 24 days. And the chicks stay on the nest for about 3 months.
That's a long time on the nest.
It is, and that's part of why they're threatened, you know, because they're on the ground a lot.
Yeah.
The female does all the incubation and feeding, but the male brings food to the mother and feeds her by regurgitation. Yum, yum.
Hey, I was thinking about that. I was like, why can't someone bring food to me and regurgitate it? I think that's a true sign of love there.
Oh, my God.
if you could see Pete
regurgitating, but I'd rather be the bloke eating all the berries and nectar and nice tasty bits of meat rather than regurgitation. But it works.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It does.
And they have one clutch per year.
Okay. So,
but they don't nest, the females don't nest every year. Every now and then they just take a break.
I love that.
I think that's
really
good.
Have a break for yourself. Yeah.
That's good.
Being a parent is hard and you deserve
absolutely. A little. It's a grind. We've got to do it, but every now and then we just have a sabbatical year. Hey, that's good.
Shout out to your children.
Exactly.
And lastly, we'll get into some threats. So we mentioned the shooting.
Yeah, that was the biggest one.
That was happening.
And although they're fully protected, there's still some shooting, but that's an education thing. Mostly, I guess, farmers, they still have some sheep being attacked, but they need to kind of contact Doc, and Doc can sort of relocate the manu
Yeah.
If there are some rogue ones that keep targeting sheep all the time, maybe we've got to cull those. But there's a management solution there, which that recovery plan can sort of work through.
Mm.
They're very vulnerable to stoats, rats, feral cats, because they're ground nesters and they spend a lot of time on the ground. And there's this episodic, semi-catastrophic deaths.
What the hell does that mean?
That just basically means every now and then you get massive deaths when the beech and the rimu are masting.
Yeah.
And masting's when every 3 to 5 years they do a mega production of seeds.
And it's the mammalian predators go crazy.
They go crazy, and there's so much food, and their numbers explode.
Mm.
And then, but once all the seeds are eaten, then they get hungry and they look for what they're going to eat, and they're going to eat the birds.
Yeah, of course.
So you can get a huge mortality rate following masting events.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's some unintended mortality from 1080 poison programs.
Okay.
But, you know, you need the 1080 programs because they do protect a whole lot of manu, including the kia.
Yeah.
But you do get a few fatalities. So they're still working on how to manage that.
Absolutely.
A few dying possum traps because they're inquisitive and they can get into things.
When I was reading about that, I was like, oh, come on, guys.
They're their own worst enemy with the intelligence sometimes.
But
oddly, lead poisoning is a problem.
Yeah, how does that come about?
Well, they developed a taste for lead. Oof. For them, it tastes sweet.
Oof.
And they've got these strong beaks and they sort of, it's like chewing gum. And they tear the lead off roofing nails and lead flashing on buildings.
Of course.
And they eat it and then they die from lead poisoning.
Yeah.
So part of the recovery program is looking at the habitat and saying, we shouldn't be using lead nails.
Exactly.
We should be not using lead flashing. There's alternatives.
We shouldn't be using lead
full
stop. So
you should just be taking the lead out of that environment. Yeah. Well, we shouldn't be.
Yeah.
So,
Pete. I'm just laughing at the little note you've written at the end here.
It's such a wonderful special manu.
Yeah.
We need to treasure it. And that we'll put it on the $10 bill.
Is it the bird on the bill?
Yeah.
That's the bird on the $10 bill.
Yeah, so we've got to use our money to protect it.
We absolutely
do. Because it's on the bill.
Yeah, absolutely do.
It's sending us a sign.
It
spend
is.
Your money on us.
Yeah. So if you see any care walking around today, make sure you give him $10. And shout, Pete, this has been awesome. And you've got a song to play. What's your song?
Yeah, a song by MySex, Computer Games, 1979. Great lyrics about computers, just when they were coming into public use.
Yep.
And I had to work hard to make a connection to the Kia. I just love the song. But it was the start of human AI, really, the first computers.
Yeah.
Versus one of the smartest manu in the world for millions of years before we even evolved.
Yeah.
So there's some connection there.
Absolutely.
Surely.
Just smart things.
Yeah.
Shot Pete, this is Computer Games by MySex.
Kia ora. Yeah.
done till the work gets done, cause the metric script don't say. Come pew, 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 pew,
Isn't that beautiful?
That was Me and All My Homies Love Native Manu, only on 95 BFM.